I'd like to welcome you to the NBAA Forum here in St. Louis. For those of you who may not know me, I'm Bob Quinn, the Central Regional Representative for the NBAA, and I'm located here in St. Louis. We wound up creating, a special day today. The venue here at Spirit is perfect for the NBAA Forum. I'd like to thank some of the people involved with the preparation of the forum here in St. Louis. The breakfast this morning was sponsored by Air Routing. The lanyards were provided by Gulfstream. The various programs and packets were provided by Universal Weather and Collins Rockwell. But in particular, I'd like to thank Jet Direct here in St. Louis. As you can see, they went to a lot of work to provide a venue for the forum here in St. Louis. The people here at Jet Direct have been patient, energetic, and generous in terms of their efforts to help support the forum here in St. Louis. Not only the personnel of Jet Direct, but also the customers of Jet Direct. The hangars that we're in are normally occupied by various corporate operators who have relinquished their hangar, basically, for the forum. And the hangar space that we're being used for, if there were weather last night, or today for that matter, Emerson Electric and Anheuser-Busch have volunteered their hangars to provide hangar space for the aircraft that are displaced here today because of the forum. So I'd really like to acknowledge that fact, that these corporate operators have done so much to cooperate and provide this venue for us. In particular, I have probably two guys here, Phil Bazinet and Norval Westfall, who have gone out of their way, and I think most of you know both Phil and Norval, to help support us. In addition, today we have Steve Hankin, who's the President and Chief Operating Officer of Jet Direct here in St. Louis. The first speaker we have, though, this morning is Steve Brown. Steve is the Senior Vice President of Operations for the NBAA. And he's one of those guys that you think, how did he do all this stuff in his lifetime? I mean, how did this guy get so much done before he got to where he is right now? Steve's background was with the FAA. He was the Vice President of Operation Planning for the FAA. He was Associate Administrator for Air Traffic Services within the FAA. He'd been president of the National Aeronautic Association, and prior to that, he was a senior vice president with AOPA in terms of legislative and technical affairs. Steve is one of those guys that you think, God, this guy is really a competent guy. And when I joined the NBAA about a year ago, some of you may recognize my background in terms of corporate aviation. I was a person who was just a corporate entity within the NBAA, and you always knew that there was expertise in Washington, D.C. and competency. But one of the things you learned of how deep that expertise and competency really is. And I'd like you to introduce Steve Brown, who's going to spend a few minutes telling you about what's currently happening within the aviation community, and I think things that are going to affect all of us very directly. Steve, would you mind making some comments?
Well, good morning, everyone, and thanks for being here. Those of you that are standing in the back, it's really very safe if you want to come forward and use any of these seats right here. Don't feel embarrassed, because when I used to teach at the university, their kids in class did all kinds of things that I know none of you will do to me, so it'll work out just fine. If you want to have a seat, feel free to do it. As Bob pointed out, I'm just going to spend a little bit of time giving you an overview of some of the key issues NBAA is working on. And this is kind of an unusual place for us to have a regional forum. All the locations you can see on the banner over there are the places that we're going this year. And typically, we will take a regional forum to places that are challenged by issues and events in some way, in order to kind of grapple with those and to build a consensus on solutions as we move forward. This is one of those rare cases where we decided to come to an airport in a community where we just wanted to feel the love. Everything is going so well here that it's one of those rare kind of opportunities. When I talk about the problems that we face and the kind of challenges that all of us are working on, for the most part, they're not in the Midwest. They're out on either coast. And this is a representative community where you have a lot of political support, you have very informed decision-making taking place, an excellent state structure, and even federal representatives that are looking after the aviation system. Now, I know that there are certainly some things that go on here, but they're not as severe as some of the things that I'm going to talk on a little bit today. And those of you that work nationally and can assist us on some of these other issues outside this local community, we'll certainly welcome your support. The first item that we dedicate a lot of resources to at NBAA and is emblematic of why we have these regional forums, and to focus a little bit on airport infrastructure, the necessary public support for airports, and the preservation of these exact kind of airports as models for business aviation, is really to ensure that the broader public and elected officials that only know about the largest air carrier airports in the country really come to understand and appreciate the economic vitality that comes from an airport like this, a strong general aviation reliever airport with a very healthy underlying foundation of economic support. When you look at places in California or New York, certainly the challenges that we face in Florida, places like Fort Lauderdale, on and on and on. Not only are there technical challenges, airspace difficulties, local political officials that are not supportive of the airport, local communities and neighbors that are challenging many aspects of the operation of the airport. This is the kind of thing that our regional representatives like Bob, and we have seven of his colleagues across the country, are working on full-time every day. And so I encourage you, those of you who are members and even those of you who are not, to interact with our regional representatives if you'd like to help us deal with a local airport issue that may be of concern to you. We deal with everything from leases to security with TSA, airspace issues with FAA, local airport management issues and economic support for airports, just a broad range of areas where we face challenges across the country. And occasionally, the staff from Washington will come out and try and help. But frequently, it is really local aviation groups of business and corporate aviation operators, as well as our regional representatives that are working locally to address those issues. So if you can volunteer and help us in those areas, we certainly welcome the assistance, and we certainly need the business and the operational insight that all of you can bring to addressing those issues. I just want to mention with regard to Fort Lauderdale that we had some really, really good news this last week. A lot of airline congestion at Fort Lauderdale as it has grown, associated with the cruise industry that has grown dramatically in Fort Lauderdale. Originally, of course, it was kind of our airport in business aviation where we were the dominant user, but that has shifted over time as commercial aviation has come to use that airport as a vital facility as well. And so there's been a lot of political back and forth on the use of those runways, the community pressuring for curfews and restrictions, and certainly a lot of runway development that was necessary. The federal government stepped in. To make a long story short, FAA was very involved in trying to preserve access at that airport. And unfortunately, FAA had just recently lost one of their rounds in supporting the airport in federal court. But luckily, on a local basis, the county politicians really stepped up, and in a very close vote, 5-4 finally at the county level, decided to accept a federal proposal for grant assistance to construct a new runway at Fort Lauderdale. It'll take probably 8 years. Those things don't go quickly. But they will reconstruct the airport, have a 5,000-foot runway go to an 8,000-foot runway, dramatically increase the capacity in South Florida, provide for future growth for both business aviation and corporate operators. So a really, really important political outcome that took a lot of courage on the part of not only the mayor, but the county council, certainly airport management, and frankly on the part of FAA to go into federal court and stand up for the airport. So a really great outcome that occurred there, and the kind of thing that we want to try and replicate all across the country where we have these kinds of challenges. On airspace access, forgetting about the surface and the politics and the infrastructure for a moment, the airspace is under severe pressure in a lot of places, whether it's the L.A. Basin, the New York metropolitan area, Chicago, all of the major metropolitan areas across the country We're dealing with trying to install new satellite-based approaches, RNP approaches, where we have a partnership with FAA in modernizing the system, and that brings great capacity for those aircraft that are equipped for those kind of operations, and more of them are every year. As many of you probably know, RVSM was implemented a couple of years ago, so now we have almost double the en route airspace at the upper altitudes. And for those of you that are equipped for that, that's been very valuable in dealing with congestion in the en route structure. But the biggest airspace redesign project that we have underway today that we're devoting a lot of resources to is the redesign of the New York metropolitan airspace. A lot of airports with a lot of congestion in a very, very small geographic area, trying to separate the flows at Teterboro from LaGuardia and JFK and other places to make sure we preserve growth and access for business aviation in the New York metropolitan area is a really very, very big challenge. Many citizen groups from the Sierra Club to local neighbors are going into federal court and opposing that airspace redesign. A lot of technical effort underway in terms of record of decision on environmental impact studies and all the kinds of things that I won't spend on here because it would really give you a headache. But that's part of why it takes years to get airspace redesigned or get runways installed. And we're devoting a lot of legal as well as regional representative and local group resources to make sure that the design for that airspace will still accommodate business aviation as well as the other users as the New York metropolitan demand grows. One of the things that FAA is doing that I just wanted to alert you all to, and this could happen at your airport, in your community, in your own backyard, no matter where you're from, is something I want you to keep on your radar screen mentally, is the FAA, from a safety perspective, is much more focused now on what they call runway safety areas, or RSAs. Without getting into all the technical design details and the engineering aspects of it, runway safety areas are there as buffers in an operational context at each end of a runway to provide some additional safety margin for the operation. A lot of older airports, and in particular general aviation reliever airports, are not in full compliance with all the technical aspects of runway safety areas. And one of the things that FAA has done to target improvements in safety is to examine those areas and to try and bring more airports into compliance with these runway safety areas. The short bottom line to it all is in many cases these runway safety areas are not long enough, maybe not wide enough, or don't have enough load-bearing capacity to support the type of use that's on the runway that has grown over the decades to be much busier with much larger aircraft than what the airport might have been originally designed for. So this FAA focus on the runway safety areas can result in your runway becoming much shorter and can often result in a change in the type of operation that could potentially occur if that happened, a decrease in access. So one of the things that we're doing, and there are a couple of cases, Teterboro was one, Stuart, Florida is another, a couple of them are emerging on the West Coast, potentially at Santa Monica and other places, is to work with what's called EMAS material, this engineered concrete, sort of a soft concrete, if you want to think of it that way, that just takes up a few hundred feet of space and can provide a rapid but safe overrun area for jet aircraft in particular. And instead of taking runway area and utilizing it for overrun instead of active use, you can put in this EMAS material and preserve the runway length. A lot of this stuff will come up first on the part of airport management, potentially in discussion with the city and the county councils. And so watch for some discussion in your local areas and maybe reach out to your airport management and see if runway safety areas are being talked about. If they are, by all means, let us know because we want to participate in trying to make sure you get the very best possible outcome. Another area of focus by FAA is safety management systems. I won't talk about this a great deal, but if you're an operator or if you're certified by FAA in any particular way for your operation, over the next couple of years, FAA is going to focus more and more on exactly what type of procedures you have to ensure a safe operation, and probably will want you to go through the discipline of an analysis of a safety management system. NBAA can help you with that. We have many resources that we can help both operators and others with in terms of safety management systems. It's an evolving science, a cutting-edge way to evaluate risk and manage risk in an aviation environment. So I'd like to spend most of the few minutes I have left really on these two final issues, security and user fees. And I think all of you know that the federal proposal for user fees for business aviation has been a battle that's been underway for about a year. And I just want to give you a quick update, not go back through the whole year, but just kind of tell you where it is today and give you a little forecast of what's likely to happen over the summer. But first on security. I think all of you know that since 9/11, the commercial aviation sector has had a lot of security brought to it that didn't exist prior to 9/11. And when you think about other modes of transportation, whether it's rail or shipping and cargo applications, a lot more security has been brought into our ports and certainly at the borders around the country. Business aviation and general aviation has certainly proactively stepped up and improved our security profile, but it hasn't been because the federal government was proposing rules for us or coming into our community and saying, we think you need to do something different. Well, that's about to change. Now, some 6 years after 9/11, TSA and the Department of Homeland Security have been preparing over the last 6 months to develop a notice of proposed rulemaking that will treat business aviation and potentially some aspects of general aviation far more broadly than we had in the past, and will offer new criteria and probably new regulations that we'll have to deal with. Now, uncharacteristic for TSA, this is going to be a public notice. There will be a comment period, and it will go through the normal rulemaking process. So by a show of hands, how many of you think that that'll last about 3 months? Okay, yeah, you got it. The reality is the comment period will probably be around 4 or 5 months. The full rulemaking process will probably go at least 2 years. TSA has done a lot of preparation that we've been involved with, along with AOPA and many other associations. And so I want to give you a sense that we anticipate that this notice of proposed rulemaking that will bring some security proposals to our community will likely come out in the July or August timeframe based on the approval process that it's going through right now. It's been sent out of the Department of Homeland Security. It's currently at the White House and at the Office of Management and Budget for Clearance. And so we think late summer is when it will likely be published. Certainly watch for NBAA to communicate what the proposal is. I'm sure other associations will do that as well. But all of us, whether we're airport management, operators, service and suppliers, are going to have a very, very strong interest in what's proposed by TSA. And we certainly want to encourage all of you to comment. Of course, NBAA will, because I'm sure there will be changes that we'll seek to make it a more pragmatic rule that's overall going to strengthen security for business aviation. And so look in the next couple of weeks for more information to come out on that. On user fees, I just want to give you an update in terms of where it is in the process. I think you all know that in February the President's budget came out. The Department of Transportation and FAA included in the President's budget proposal what they thought the right financing system for the FAA for the next 10 years would be. That's called the reauthorization proposal. In that proposal, there was an element of it that would have increased user fees for the first time and applied them to the general aviation and business aviation community. The level of those fees was unspecified, but the amount of money that they wanted to collect from those fees was specified, and it was about $1.5 billion. That legislation, of course, was proposed by the President. Initially, it was taken up in the Senate by the Commerce Committee. They held hearings through the spring. The House committees also held hearings through the spring. And then the Senate Commerce Committee actually went to markup, which is a negotiation on the bill, to try and report it out of committee to the full Senate for a vote. The Senate Commerce Committee, after a struggle between business aviation, general aviation interests, and the airlines, actually voted 11 to 12 to report the bill out, not only to the full Senate, but ultimately to the Senate Finance Committee. So it was only reported out by one vote. Business aviation nearly prevailed in eliminating all user fees from the bill in the Commerce Committee. Certainly we're going to now take that battle to the full Senate floor. And one of the aspects of the bill deals with a reauthorization of the fuel tax. And that's being dealt with by the Finance Committee. And they're considering a fuel tax increase of around 50 cents a gallon. The administration bill had proposed up to 70 cents a gallon. And so it's come down a little bit. But now we're engaged in a battle in the Senate Finance Committee. All of the general aviation interests aligned in an alliance – to try and make sure that that fuel tax increase is much more reasonable and reflects sort of the rate of inflation and will support modernization of the system and is not a fuel tax increase as large as being proposed initially. The House is yet to act, but it will have two committees, an aviation committee called the Transportation Committee, as well as the Ways and Means Committee, which is the tax committee that will deal with the fuel tax as well. We're much more optimistic that in the House there will be a very, very low fuel tax and probably no user fees in their bill. That's not a foregone conclusion, but we think we're going to do much better in the House than we will do in the Senate, and we plan to do much better in the Senate than we've done already. Now, all of that will take place in July, probably in the House. Come September, because as all of you know, I think, the Congress takes August off and comes back to the district so that they can talk to all of you. But when they come back in September, the House and the Senate will come together in a negotiation and try and report out a final bill. Now, everybody that's involved in this battle on user fees, whether it's the commercial airlines, the general aviation community, NBAA as an association, agrees that we need to modernize our air traffic control system. We need capacity for the future. We're all happy that the things that happened in Fort Lauderdale happened. We're all happy that the FAA is spending more money on the air traffic control system, investing in airport infrastructure. We know we need airport grants. We know we need satellite-based approaches. The real questions that everybody's tussling over is who's going to pay how much and when and what a fair share is. All of us want to pay our fair share. The difficulty is different user segments have different ideas about what their fair share is. So ultimately, when you take a look at the two key issues, and there are actually about 100 issues in the reauthorization bill, but here are two, when you look at fuel taxes and the user fee, which in the Senate bill is a $25 per flight user fee, our point of view, I think as many of you know, is that fuel taxes have proven to be a very efficient way to collect the contribution from our community into the Aviation Trust Fund. We're paying around 7 or 8% of the total bill, and we believe that represents our fair share based on our use of the system. And the reality is that there's no cost to collect it. You can't avoid it. The more you use the system, the more fuel you burn, the more you pay. It's a progressive way to pay for the system. In contrast to all the things you can see with regard to a flat $25 per flight, which is a regressive system, costs money to collect, has to involve invoicing and billing. There's a bureaucracy and an overhead associated with it. It certainly is not the kind of system that we support in the general and business aviation community. You can see here sort of in more detail what some of the initial proposals were for the various types of operators in our system and the fact that, of course, what the current law is on turbine aircraft in the center column and what the proposal in the Senate plan has been, even though it's not moved through the Senate Finance Committee yet and it has not yet gone to the Senate floor where we hope to amend it even further. And the biggest travesty, we think, in the proposal in the Senate, of course, is in the far right column for the commercial airlines. Their fuel tax that they currently and historically have paid, which is 4.3 cents a gallon, would be eliminated. That would give them a $500 million a year windfall. That would have to then be picked up by other users, both business aviation and cargo operators, to make everything come out in the wash. And actually, we think they should continue to pay that to reflect their contribution to the modernization of the air traffic control system. So the next steps, as I said, is to continue the work in the Finance Committee in the Senate. When it comes to the Senate floor, work the bill there, try and amend it and improve it there. Obviously, the House, as I said, will have action most likely in July, and then the conference committee to negotiate a final product in September. The airlines are involved in what's called a fat cat campaign. Some of you, if you've been in airports lately, may have seen their commercials where they run a vignette in the airport terminals on CNN Airport of a corporate flight operation with a flight attendant serving champagne to a couple of guys talking about a tea time and a few other aspects of business aviation that they see as iconic or typical, which we all know is not. And so we have, along with the Alliance, put up counter ads on CNN Airport to present business aviation and general aviation in its true light, talk about the economic benefits of business aviation, what it contributes to the economy, and try and put it in the correct light compared to what the airlines have done. We anticipate the airlines may start running these ads on their onboard entertainment systems, try and mobilize their frequent flyers and really ratchet up the campaign after the very close vote in the Senate Commerce Committee, which really put a lot of fear into them that we may prevail on this issue. So we're going to need to have all of our members and everyone in the business aviation community very, very active because the airlines are certainly going to ramp up the pressure, use their frequent flyers, use their employees and everybody that they can to communicate their point of view. We have at MBAA on our website, some of you may have used this, just by show of hands, how many of you have been to the Contact Congress website? That's great. Thanks very much. And all I can say is it's not a one-time effort. Every time the bill moves, we need you to go to Contact Congress again and express your point of view to your elected officials. Elected officials are busy people. They focus on a lot of issues. They sometimes need to be reminded of your point of view as this bill moves through the process, through the various committees and through the various houses on their action. And so I'd encourage you to go to this website and compose your communication to your elected officials. It's very simple to do, very user-friendly, and there's sample information there that you can modify lightly if you want to do that. Also, we have an online advocacy center that has all the background papers and information on the user fee issue as well as many other issues that we're working on. So you can go to that address if you want and do a little homework, learn more about the issue. We post updates there in terms of what's gone on in the last couple of days or last week. And so it's a good way to stay updated on it and to stay informed on the issue as well. NBAA is just one part of a broader alliance of organizations and individuals that are taking this fight on user fees so very seriously. And the Alliance for Aviation Across America is composed of all the business and general aviation associations, local communities, mayors, city and town councils, a lot of agricultural and farming interests across the country, the League of Rural Voters. More than 3,000 associations have come together in the Alliance for Aviation Across America to support the importance of local airports like this, the business and general aviation community, and to make sure that we are an effective counterweight to the misrepresentation that the commercial airlines are bringing on the FAA reauthorization bill. And so I encourage you to be a part of the alliance if you haven't joined it, but more importantly, their website contains a lot of information as well in terms of how you can express your point of view on these issues. So I hope that all of you will access these capabilities and express your point of view to your elected officials in the future. We very, very much need your help, and those of you that have been active in the past, we appreciate it. We couldn't have had the outcome in the Senate that we did, and we'll need to be even more effective in the future. So thank you very much. I'll conclude there. If you have one or two questions, I'd be happy to answer those, but we do have some other speakers later today, and so I want to be fair to them. Are there just one or two things that anybody would like to explore? Yes, sir.
More of a comment about what you said about the airlines using their frequent flyers against the user fees or toward user fees. AOPA sent out a mass email today. The frequent flyer magazines, I think, in United Northwest have already started with articles. And what Phil Boyer and AOPA are suggesting is that AOPA has presented an article, rather than buying ad space in the magazine, have each of us put it in the magazine while you're flying on those carriers, to sort of put the GA side of it in the minds of the flyers.
Yeah, it's a great tactic. You know, a lot of times on the back of the napkins or whatever, there's advertising. But if you can take a sheet of paper and, you know, express your point of view, it's a good direct way to do it. And I would encourage you really to try and express your point of view mostly to the management of those airline companies. I mean, I think all of us recognize that the people that have a passion about aviation, like all of us do, whether they're flight attendants or pilots or people that work for the commercial carriers, are often general aviation pilots and are often allied with our point of view. And I say that because my own brother, who owns a Cessna 182 and is more passionate about aviation probably as a general aviation pilot than he is as a United Airlines pilot, is a typical example. So, I mean, I don't think we should beat up people who are our allies, and many people who work for the airlines are, but it really is the management of the carriers that and their elected officials in Washington with the Air Transport Association that are engaged in this kind of misrepresentation and the editorials that you talked about that typically come from the CEOs. But anything you can do to express your opinion at the grassroots is very helpful. Elected representatives, many of them are here today, and I'm sure they'll say this to you, pay attention to the people who can vote for them and who can contribute to them. Because of the kind of reform that's taken place in Washington, D.C., people like me who are hired lobbyists and disclose their activities can no longer donate as much money as we used to elected representatives. We cannot vote for people here in Missouri or in California. And they recognize that. The people they really care about are the people that return them to office and contribute to them locally. And you are those people, not somebody inside the Beltway. I believe, of course, that federal lobbyists have a role and should be treated well. I'm sure you would recognize that. But we are only one part of the equation. You are the most important part.
Yes. What about the air traffic control organization I've read about, in which the airlines are trying to monopolize the ATC system?
Yeah, well, so one of the elements of the proposal, the reauthorization proposal I did not talk about, but is great, and I'm glad you asked that question, is there's a proposal in the legislation for there to be a board that oversees some of the funding for the modernization of the system as well as some aspects of the air traffic control system. The proposal is for it to be somewhere in the range of a 10 to 15 person board. If General Aviation was lucky, they would have one, maybe two seats on that board. The other people would largely be from the commercial carriers, the cargo carriers, some people from government as well, and some citizen interests. But the conventional wisdom, of course, is that we would be dramatically outvoted and underrepresented on a board like that, and that it would certainly be more dominated by commercial interests than by a business or private interests. And so that's one aspect of the reauthorization that you'll see in the Advocacy Center and some of the other areas that you might explore on the website. And that whole issue of control of the airspace system and where investment goes in the future, from airport grants to instrument approaches that might be put in, all would be overseen by that board, and that's a critical aspect that we're lobbying in the outcome of that legislation. So communicating about appropriate representation on that board, and frankly, not even having that board and having that kind of control stay with Congress is our preferred position. We favor the congressional committees doing the kind of oversight that they're elected to do because we feel it's a more objective forum within which to have this kind of decision-making occur. Well, thank you much, very much again for all of you being here and listening for me for a couple of minutes, and now we'll go on to some of our other speakers, and Bob will come back up. Hope to see you all later in the day. Thanks.